No part of this program may be used for training artificial intelligence technology. From KDNK Community Access Radio in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States, this is program number 74 of the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience them like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful or just more fun for us and our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people, not only to go literally around the world, but around the block to new adventures in their lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer help them to lead a normal life, to people like me, who are totally blind, to sighted parents who have a blind child, blind parents who have sighted children, blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, what to do and where to go if you're losing your vision or become completely blind. There will be a time for many of our listeners or people they care about when they become visually impaired, when glasses and contact lenses no longer allow them to lead a normal life, and their doctor tells them there's no more he or she can do for them. If that happens, it's time to get a second opinion from an eye care specialist or a medical school. Be aggressive about getting that specialized appointment, because problems with things like glaucoma can deteriorate quickly. It's not that your family optometrist or ophthalmologist may not be competent. It's that they may not have much experience with the complicated kinds of eye problems we have.
The most important thing that we can do when we start to lose vision is talk with our eye care providers about what to expect, what this journey is going to look like, and what other resources are out there that you can get connected with. And knowing that this may be a lifelong journey, and accepting that the way that you do certain activities might look different, but that there are resources that are out there that are designed to help you. And it can often be more challenging than it should be to get connected with those resources, but they do exist. And just to not give up and maintain some hope and try to find these resources and take advantage of them.
That's Dr. Cade Oost.
I am an assistant professor of ophthalmology at the University of Colorado Anschutz School of Medicine, and I work in the low vision rehabilitation service at the Sue Anschutz Rogers Eye Center here in Aurora.
Dr. Oost says your next step is to learn what options are available for your future.
Chatting with your eye care providers about what low vision options are around you, finding a community with other visually impaired people and figuring out what the people in the communities around you are doing and how they're adapting, because vision loss can also be kind of a socially isolating process. And so it's really important to build a sense of community and finding what the local resources are, whether there's departments of occupational rehabilitation or vocational rehabilitation, whether there's blind rehab centers near you that can help work on mobility skills and kitchen skills and other activities of daily living. It's all about finding whatever those resources are that are closest to you.
For most people losing their vision, it's a slow process, but it occasionally happens suddenly. I know two people who went to the eye doctor to get their prescription changed on their glasses, and within a couple of days were either legally blind or totally blind. Lorraine Hutchinson is a retired orientation and mobility instructor. Her work included teaching people how to use a white cane. She had a client who one day just woke up blind.
Not that common, but it can be pretty traumatic. I remember a guy I worked with in New Zealand who had some issues with glaucoma, and he just one day woke up and he couldn't see anything, and he was a mess. He couldn't get from room to room, and it was kind of an emergency. And they tried surgically to help him, and his vision was pretty much gone. But we were able to help him a lot, and we had a walking group, and he got some mobility training and help in the kitchen and all sorts.
Another cause of sudden blindness is being shot, a common cause of blindness. Listen to the Tactile Traveler program number 56 for information on being shot and blindness. But most people lose their sight slowly, frequently over a number of years. Only 15% of people with vision problems will go completely blind. Dr. Ooz says the best time to learn low vision skills is as soon as you become visually impaired.
When we get a diagnosis like that, there's often kind of a grief process that we have to go through. This is a life-changing diagnosis. And one of the things that I try to instill in patients is that it's never too early to reach out and get connected to these resources, especially if we know that you're going to be losing a significant amount of vision in the future. Because you're absolutely right, it's often easier to learn some of these skills like Braille or using a white cane. It's often easier to learn these skills when we still have fairly functional vision, and it gives you more time to prepare for vision loss instead of kind of being tossed into the deep end and not learning these skills until they're already necessary for you to live independently. And so I don't think there's a time that is too early to reach out for these resources if you know that we're expecting profound vision loss down the line.
A common reaction to being diagnosed with a vision loss is to deny it, because you may see pretty well for a long time.
That's extremely common, especially, I hate to generalize, but I'm going to say that in my experience of many years, 40 plus years working in the field, men seem to find it a little bit harder. They pretend that they can see, get into some difficulties, usually with mobility issues. I had a client who was falling over. He had a condition that gave him sort of a strange gait, and he wouldn't use a cane or any kind of identification bracelet. And he was picked up as a drunk, and he would fall. And that wasn't the issue. You can, a short white ID cane, especially if you're starting to fall and stumble, and then you probably need some cane training, and some people decide they would like a guide dog. But you need to have proper cane training first. And you know, Nick, you don't just get given a dog. It doesn't work like that. Long cane training. But I mean, if you're still able to walk around pretty well, a short cane, just to maybe see what the depth of the curb is, walking down steps, etc. And just for ID, you know, if you struggle reading a board in a restaurant, you can't see the menu, bump into people. If you have an identification cane, it saves a lot of embarrassment. People might treat you a little differently, and I think that's why people hold off doing that, because they don't want to be treated any differently.
A short cane is one that comes between your hips and your breastbone. A long cane comes to your forehead. I love my long canes because they give me information, like approaching a curb or steps sooner, which gives me more time to react. A good place to get your first white cane is from the National Federation of the Blind. They'll give you a free, long, straight white cane every 6 months. Search for National Federation of the Blind, Baltimore, Maryland. Then go to extension number 3. They also have a large variety of other kinds of white canes and other blind supplies. Dr. Uth says denying your loss of vision slows down your rehabilitation process.
Well, that's a very sort of individualized journey for a lot of people, I will say. And it's something that we struggle with in our profession at times because, you know, I know that there's a lot of devices and resources that really help folks adapt to progressive vision loss, but oftentimes they might not be ready to take that step or accept that part of the journey. And I think oftentimes the patients I work with that are having the hardest time accepting their vision loss are the patients who are waiting for a cure to their eye condition. There's always a lot of exciting research going on, and a decade from now we'll be in a very different position with how we treat a lot of these conditions. But what I really try to emphasize in patients is that we don't want to be waiting 10 years for a cure that might not come. We want to be addressing the functional issues you're having here and now, and, you know, help you with the difficulties you're having day to day, and not wait on some cure that may come along in 10 plus years. But it's a difficult part of the journey. And I think what I would really look for is acceptance on when you realize you're no longer able to do things in the same way that you used to. And I think driving is a perfect example of that, where the moment we decide to put our keys down is often a pivotal moment in the sort of journey of acceptance of our vision loss.
Dr. Uth says it's important to meet other people with vision loss and blindness.
As eye care providers, I'm obviously very familiar with these conditions and with the common complaints and issues that people with vision loss go through, but I'm also someone who is typically sighted. And as familiar as I may be with these conditions, I don't have the lived experience of vision loss that my patients do. And I think for a lot of them, it's really important to connect with someone who shares some of those lived experiences and learn from them, and also grieve with them about the loss of their vision. And I think that working in a community with other visually impaired people can go such a long way toward helping individuals cope and adapt their vision loss, especially seeing someone who's maybe further along in their vision loss journey and seeing how they've thrived with the resources that they've taken advantage of. And I think that can often serve as a source of inspiration for people who are kind of earlier in their vision loss journey. One of the difficult things is that often these conditions are so rare that there's not always a large sort of in-person support group for people with vision loss, depending on what city you live in. And a lot of people nowadays are leaning towards online communities as a source of camaraderie and kind of shared experience with other visually impaired people. And whether it's a local Facebook group, or there's even a program through Rutgers University called the Eye to Eye Peer Support Program for Vision Loss, that's kind of a hotline that people can call that offers a lot of different services so that people with vision impairment can talk to other peers with vision impairment, just with kind of the mental health issues and feelings of hopelessness and loss of independence that can come along in, as a part of this journey. It's 833-932-3931. 833-932-3931. And their website is the word I-E-Y-E, the number 2, the word I again, .rutgers.edu.
In countries like Canada, there's a national agency like the CNIB, the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, that serves visually impaired people nationally. The closest thing to that in the United States is American Printing House for the Blind in Louisville, Kentucky.
My name is Richard Ureta. I am the assistant director with the American Printing House for the Blind's Connect Center, otherwise known as the APH Connect Center. The APH Connect Center is one of many portals, but an important portal to connect folks who are adjusting to vision loss, learning how to live with blindness or a significant amount of vision that they no longer have. And what we do is there are two ways to connect with us at the APH Connect Center. I want to underscore that we're not the only way to be connected to, but we're an important aspect. We have a toll-free number, 1-800-232-5463. 1-800-232-5463. You can call us and leave a voicemail and or talk to a person during business hours, and we'll provide you with gather as much information as we can about what your need is. And if we don't have the answer, we will research for you. Alternatively, folks can email us at Connect Center, and I will spell that, CONNECTCENTER. That's Connect Center at APH.org. And the same information applies. You can reach out to us through email, ask your question, and our staff and myself will find those resources the best we can to connect the caller or the email person to the resources they need locally, regionally, nationally, or sometimes internationally, if that's the case.
The National Printing House for the Blind offers many services that don't include printing.
APH Connect Center is one of many programs at the American Printing House for the Blind. At our core, we provide books in large print, books in Braille to students in school so that they can have resources equivalent to their mainstream counterparts. And that's been our mission since 1858. A little over 7 years ago, we were contacted by the American Foundation for the Blind, who at the time were great stewards of our information and referral line. And they were also stewards of the what people may know as Vision Aware, Career Connect, and Family Connect. Those are websites that folks can dial in to get resources. And when I say dial in, I mean they can log on the internet and look for resources for job seekers, for adults adjusting to vision loss, or for families who are raising children who are blind or low vision. So those three websites, as well as our information and referral line, are now what we call the APH Connect Center.
Don't hesitate to call the American Printing House for the Blind with questions that may seem unimportant to other people. Like Richard, many of the people that answer your calls are blind like he is. And understand. If you're looking for local assistance after being diagnosed as visually impaired and you don't live in or near a big city with lots of resources for blind people, you can contact your nearest Center for Independence. They may or may not have a lot of expertise in blindness. My Center for Independence had a support group for folks with low vision for a while that totally changed my life. It's where I heard about the Colorado Center for the Blind. You can also call the National Federation of the Blind in Baltimore, Maryland, and dial 0. They can connect you with your state Federation of the Blind president. Don't hesitate to call National Federation of the Blind state presidents. They're there to help you. If you're working and need help adapting to your vision change for your current job or are looking for a job, immediately contact your state department or division of vocational rehabilitation. Because of the big, beautiful bill, they've had drastic budget cuts, so get on their waiting list. For more information on what your State Department or Division of Vocational Rehabilitation can do for you, check out the Tactile Traveler Program Number 58. The Colorado Department of Vocational Rehabilitation sent me to Broadcasting Trade School, and I'm on my 57th year as a reporter as a result. A big problem is that doctors usually don't refer patients to Voc Rehab or other services that can help their patients. I had 22 eye surgeries in 3 states, and not one of those doctors even mentioned Voc Rehab or other services that could help me. Low vision specialists like Dr. Oost will guide you through special equipment, like all kinds of magnifiers and specialized lights that can help you. If you have trouble seeing the screen on your cell phone, even if it's just in bright light, you may be eligible for free directory assistance, which includes dialing your phone for you. You will need written proof of low vision or blindness from a doctor, rehab counselor, or rehab organization. You should carry proof of low vision or blindness in your purse or backpack all the time, in case you're questioned, like people like bus drivers or light rail security, when you take advantage of reduced or free rides for people with disabilities. You should also be aware of Charles-Binet syndrome. That's when the part of your brain that interpreted vision in the past becomes bored and creates images in your brain, which may be scary, confusing, or occasionally pleasant. Most doctors don't tell their patients about Charles-Binet syndrome, which is a normal part of going blind for between 45 and 50% of people who are losing or have lost their sight. So they think they're going crazy and are afraid to tell anyone about it. For a really good explanation of Charles-Binet syndrome, go to the Tactile Traveler program number 50. If you'd like to keep up with the latest news, you have 2 options. Audio information networks like AfterSight here in Colorado will have a volunteer read your local newspaper to you every day. For national and international news, you can go to the National Federation of the Blind Newsline. A problem with being blind is that well-meaning sighted people hold us back.
I see that often with pediatric patients, especially where there's a tendency when you have a visually impaired child to sort of bubble wrap them a little bit. And that's a really understandable sort of anxiety that comes with having a child with vision loss. But it is true that often the sort of typically sighted family members that are part of a visually impaired person's support system might not fully understand the extent of their independence and their capabilities and might have some sort of preconceived notions about what someone with vision loss can and can't do. And our goal is to try to empower these patients to be as independent as they can be.
Finally, being visually impaired and even totally blind isn't as bad as most people imagine.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that with the right devices and resources in the modern sort of digital age, people with blindness are able to do all sorts of things that we might not have thought possible in the past. I have patients who are totally blind who are asking for accommodations to take the bar exam, and they're going on to be successful lawyers and successful artists. It is possible to live an extremely meaningful and fulfilling life with vision loss. That life often looks a little bit different, and we need to make sure we're getting access to the right resources and accommodations. But I think that there is a sense of hope that I try to instill in a lot of my patients, that even if they do progress to lose more and more vision, there's so many rehabilitative tools and interventions we have in our toolbox now that we didn't even imagine 10 or 20 years ago, especially when we look at things like the rise of artificial intelligence and using devices like the Meta glasses, you know, the ways that we can get things read aloud to us that just give people with vision loss even more independence than what they've had in the past.
Why, it's my talking scale. reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please let us know by sending an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell traveler the American way with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on AfterSight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and on audio information networks in additional states. It's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine, and available wherever you get podcasts, and by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people and organizations that made today's program possible. Be My Eyes, Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Isaac Williams, Kelly Baker, Kaylee Romero, Evan Starnes, and Raleigh Burley. This has been The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This is a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.